Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm the second one.
I'm Pete.
The one with the hairy chest. And we are coming to you live from a couple of places. We are live on YouTube, Twitch, Twitter/X, Instagram, not Facebook tonight because I messed up the times that this was scheduled for. Sorry to anybody who was trying to check us out on Facebook. But maybe you're listening later on Spotify or Stitcher or the app of your choice. Just a little note on that at the top of the show that I'm going to be saying a lot over the next couple of months. But Google Podcasts, if you're subscribed there, that is going away at the end of March. I know a bunch of people listen to this podcast on Google Podcasts. So subscribe literally anywhere else, or you can transfer your subscription over to YouTube Music for some reason. Check it out there.
I'll just transcribe the show live on Facebook on my updates, on my status.
Oh, sweet.
Okay, guys?
Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, sweet.
So, you can put it on Threads. I love that.
Threads goes to Instagram, goes to Facebook, right?
Perfect. Wait, sorry, what did you just say, Alex? I want to make sure I get it right. And Pete, just wait a second before you talk, and then...
Yeah, okay, we'll take it back to the beginning. We'll take it back to the beginning, just so you can make sure to write everything down.
How do you type music? How do you type music, Alex?
I don't want to waste too much time, because, of course, the other big thing we're going to be doing on the show, beyond our guests, is we're going to be bringing you live updates throughout the evening from the New Hampshire primaries. I have my two crack political experts from different sides of the spectrum, Justin and Pete. I'll let you guess which one is from which side of the spectrum. But, guys, just your rough take. Who do you think is going to win this primary, and what is New Hampshire?
I think Lex Luthor, is that a fair? Can we slide him in there?
Yeah, I think so. I'm voting President Psycho. That was teased in a recent issue of Wonder Woman, and fingers crossed it comes to pass tonight. Pete,
I love
you?
When comics covers pop.
You are like Professor Psycho. You know what I mean? Oh. So I can see why you identify it, you know, with
I really don't like that.
You don't like that?
I don't like
it. You have a professorial.
Yeah, you have like
that
villain superhead kind of thing going on. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, we have our first district was reporting with one vote for Krang from Derek Greenhart. Thank you, Derek, for voting for Krang. We'll stay tuned to this throughout the night. In the meantime, why don't we bring in our first guest, because we have two amazing guests for you. He is the co-creator of Copycat, which is on Zoop. Right now, Heath Imodio. Heath,
hey,
welcome to the show. Hello.
Hello, gentlemen. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on. So, Copycat, it's on Zoop right now. There are 10 days remaining. There's still time to pledge for the Zoop. I still don't know the exact term. Is it pledging a Zoop? Is it supporting a Zoop?
Zooping? I don't know what the verb is. So
Zoop a Zoop.
Yeah, you say Zoop, there it is.
Exactly.
Oh, wow, dude.
Not out loud, though.
Not out loud. You don't actually say that to
other people.
This book is great. We got an advanced look at it, and I'm not going to spoil too much or anything really other than what you have on the Zoop project. But I love the basic idea here, as well as you and Cullen Bunn and the rest of the team, how you execute on it. What do you feel comfortable saying about the pitch for the book?
I can give a little bit of background about you know how it came to us, and then where we kind of went with it. It's a collaboration with Todd Garner, who used to be the president of Sony and Disney. He's responsible for films like Tag with Jeremy Renner and Sorcerer's Apprentice with Nicolas Cage, and he did the most recent Mortal Kombat. He's actually filming the second one now. I had binged his podcast and really appreciated his take on producing films, and I reached out to him and asked if he had anything that he wanted to do in the comic book space, because it's the arena that we know. Obviously, Colin is one of the most prolific creators out there, and you know, we definitely wanted to work with him, and he gave us a one sheet and let us just run with it, really. And the basic premise is he wanted an everyday person who had this ability to kind of draw someone's pain or like kind of diagnose what someone's illness or pain would be. So obviously an ER nurse made the most sense for the job. So she can diagnose people by a simple touch, but she's, by the same token, she's forced to take that pain or illness on herself as a result of that. So
I don't know how much you want to talk about. If I can jump in right there, the way that that is shown in the comic, yeah. It was so visceral, and it made me feel a little of the pain too. how did you come about? And I like that you take the time and space to really do that, which I feel like is, you know, every panel's a premium. What brought you to that? Because it was one of my favorite parts of the issue.
I mean, it came down to what would work the best visually, right? And Elmer just conveying it. Like, we wanted to show inside, kind of. There was I'm not sure if it was like the Guy Ritchie Sherlock Holmes, but as a director, he usually shows like impact of certain hits when you zoom into the body and you start feeling it a little bit more than you would a normal fight scene. So we tried to do that through the art, try to convey where exactly it was affecting the patient and where it was going to affect her and her own body. And Elmer really just crushed it. You know, he made it really energetic. I feel like that scene kind of leaps off the page. You really feel it. I was really happy when he sent back the pencils and we were like, yeah, like that looks, that's there exactly it. And then obviously the, you know, the yellow effect and the energy coursing through her body, it just came out. We couldn't have asked for it to come out any better than it did.
Yeah, it's really cool.
It looks amazing. Yeah. The other thing that I think is kind of amazing about the concept, or interesting to me about the concept, and I don't mean this necessarily derogatorily, but usually when you get a video game person on a project like this, it feels like this is a setup for a video game. This is how you're going to play through it. This doesn't feel like this. This definitely feels comic first. How much of that was a discussion behind the scenes?
I mean, the discussion from day one was always comic first. Yeah. We always wanted to tell a great story through comics. And it really came down to explaining to Todd that we understand it may never become anything else, right? But Colin and I love this medium so much that we wanted to be able to tell a great story here. And it's just a way to collaborate with people that we really enjoy their work, right? So the comic, first and foremost, was always the most important thing, always the most important aspect. We just want to tell a great story there. And anything else that comes out of it is gravy. But, you know what, that happens how often? Things get optioned every week, right? But you actually see things happen. They bat 200 on a good day, right? To go back to your sports reporting, Alex. So, you know.
wow. I like you say that with almost a straight face. Yikes. It's working.
Yeah, thank you. But, you know, and it was also really important to Todd that it be grounded, right? Like, she has this power, but it's not an MCU story. It's closer to John Wick, Atomic Blonde. We wanted it to be an everyday person that she's thrown into this extraordinary situation where this woman stumbles out of a building and dies in her arms. And she's kind of thrust into this mystery of who this woman is, why they kill her. She's now a loose string because she's a witness to this whole thing. And then through her powers, which she normally just uses in the hospital, she kind of leeches this other woman's powers, which is like a little bit of super strength, the ability to fight. And she's now she's hunted by all these people as she tries to unravel this mystery. And it all actually ties to her own powers and the death of her parents and everything kind of comes full circle. But like the mystery and having it grounded were most important to Todd and us. Cause we, first and foremost, it's like what Jordan Peele says about horror, right? You want a great story first, then you add the genre elements into it. So, you know, whether she has powers or not, we wanted this story to make sense and we wanted the mystery to unravel naturally and organically. And I think we really are really happy with how the story came across.
Yeah, I mean, this thing, not only does it jump off the page, but this thing moves. I love the action of it, the kind of nonstop of it. It's a great feel when you kind of open this comic and jump in. What was your favorite part about working on this? What was your kind of like seeing it, this final kind of printing? What was your favorite panel or favorite moment?
Well, I mean, the best part of doing comics is getting the art, right? It's having that handed to you after you've written the script and seeing it come to life from it, from the artist. You know, I loved writing action scenes. Colin gets to do it all the time. He's written X-Men. He's written, you know, Moon Knight. I don't normally get to do that stuff. We did a little bit of it with the Heathens, but so that was fun to really break that down by panel, because it's, you know, it's a visual format, but it's still on a page. Mm-hmm. So you want to make sure that you're feeling it, and it's, you know, it's leaping off and it's really kinetic and hitting you. And, you know, so that was a lot of fun to write. There's a scene where she's attacked in her apartment by two people, and all the back and forth and making sure that worked logistically, like that was probably the most fun to write. And I like how the powers, those characters, their certain powers and the backstory with her and her parents was probably secondary.
I do want to get back to this in a second, but before I forget, every week on the show, we have a professional chef, for real, named Brent Macris, Stray Bullet, aka Stray Bullies, who, yeah, no, it sounds like
he's legit, man.
Yeah, he's legit. He's opened up a new restaurant in New Orleans very soon, which we're very excited about. But he takes a break from opening new restaurants that are world renowned by curating or creating a cocktail for us here on the show. And this week he was inspired by Copycat. He created the Copycat, not a Negroni, which is kind of a Negroni, but it has dry vermouth instead of sweet vermouth.
Yeah.
It's that's awesome. Very good. So I just wanted to bring it up for you. So there you go.
I'm sure Colin will take a screenshot of that and try it. He definitely loves his specialty drinks. So
excellent. Yeah, nice. We'll shoot you an email with it. I did want to ask you about the partnership with Colin a little bit. It was interesting to hear you talk about, to kind of hit down the same vein as the video game thing, that you don't think TV first, because the two of you, you have a company, right? Mm-hmm. You have Hustle and Heart Films, and you have things that have been and are in development. So that has to be part of the process a little bit, right? Like, where does that come in then for you?
I mean, to be completely honest, the only reason we even started Hustle and Heart Films was just because back in 2018, there were so many horror stories throughout the comic book industry of creators having their stuff optioned, losing the rights to it, it getting lost in legal battles for decades, right? So we wanted to give creators a more hands-on opportunity to be involved in the development of their properties rather than just optioning it and hoping something happens. You get to be involved and, you know, go after TV showrunners and directors and stuff like that. And through that, we sold two shows right out of the gate in 2018, one to CW, one to Showtime. The one to CW, Colin and I actually created.
That's awesome.
And then we sold one the following year to Amazon. So while it is something that we enjoy, and obviously it's fun to work in that space, I mean, we've gotten to work with Method Man because of it. And right now we're working on comic book projects with Katie Sackhoff from Mandalorian and Kristen Kreuk from Smallville. Wow. And Bobby Moynihan from Saturday Night Live. And this is great. Like, if nothing else happens but great comics, we get to collaborate with these amazing people and, you know, they also put out a good book, right? Hopefully great book. And if it comes something else, then so be it. That's great. I mean, we're not going to say no, right? But we want to tell great stories through comics first. And that's been the very first conversation with everybody that we collaborate with. It has to be a great book, because that means the most to us. We love this medium.
I don't mean to correct you, by the way, but I believe the credit that Bobby Moynihan prefers is my level 2 improv class, because that's really, we have to start. But, you know, whatever you want to say, Saturday Night Live, that one of the two things. Your choice, I guess.
He acted out as he was pitching us his idea, and he had Colin and I just rolling. We were dying laughing. It's a great idea, great project. We're really looking forward to working on it with them. That's really more about working with heroes, so to speak, or people we admire in that aspect. And, you know, and we get to do it in a medium we love. So
But Bobby, I feel like all those people you named have the interest and love of the different genre stuff. Like, I know Bobby is obsessed with like Lost very specifically, mm-hmm. to the point where it was like a problem when the show ended for him. So I feel like he goes hard in whatever sci-fi or fantasy story he's
working. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And he would be writing the book that we're doing with him. We would just be, you know, helping him along with formatting and stuff. He's written comics for, I believe, Marvel. He did might have been DC. He did like a backstory, back of the book type story. Kristen and her writing partner would be writing their book, you know, and then Katie would be co-authoring with Cullen on one of the projects that we're working on. So, you know, as far as the TV stuff, like, it's gut-wrenching and heartbreaking, and so little actually moves forward that at least we get to really thoroughly enjoy ourselves in the comic book side of things. Right. And then have our heart broken down the road if we end up, you know, almost like selling stuff, but it doesn't actually go, which is mind boggling. But, you know,
sorry, I'm actually feeling your pain by touching what you're saying. Right? I'm copycatting you. Just here.
Yeah. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Let's just to get back to the Zoop campaign for a second. So, as we mentioned, it's still ongoing as of this taping for another 10 days. There are a bunch of different things that you can get, including the book, of course, but you can also get personalized levels. Can you talk about that a little bit? What's involved?
I mean, that's just something I wanted to put out there as a fan, right? Like, obviously, I love original art. I love commissions. So we wanted to offer the opportunity for people that support the campaign to have it's prose story. It's not going to be comic book pages, but, you know, a prose story based on you set in the copycat universe. You get a power, right? And then you can even go further and have a artist do an original commission of your character. You know, and they're all amazing artists that I've gotten commissions from over the years. And I thought as a fan, it'd be something that people might gravitate towards, because who doesn't want to see who are comic book lovers yourself as a character with a power, you know, and especially conveyed through an actual commission where you get to frame that and throw it in all your friends' faces when they come over and they're like, that's me in the copycat universe. You know what I mean? So just as a fan myself, because I'm in my 40s, but I still get down on the floor and look through the dollar bins for 6 hours. You know what I mean? Trying to find things I need to finish runs. You know what I mean? I just need 6 issues for Daredevil series one. That's it. And of course, we're on the first 10, of course. But I know Colin's going for his second time through of X-Men, having that whole collection. But
dang.
Like, when I say I love the medium, I mean it. You know what I mean? So if I felt like fans would like the opportunity to be included.
Yeah, that's so cool. And before we let you go, the whole book is done at this point, right? Like, if you're pledging the Zoop, you're 100% definitely going to get it no matter what.
Yeah, yeah. We just need a little bit of coloring in the back of the book, but that's it. Everything else is absolutely done.
Awesome.
Great.
Before we let you go, anything else you want to plug, Heath? Anything else people should check out?
Colin and I have Long Haul coming out in the end of February, March, from Storm King Comics. Nice. We're really excited about that one. I don't know if you've seen anything about it, but I had seen a documentary about Long Haul serial killers, and they start out with listing these facts where at any given time there are 700 missing or murdered victims and around 300 active serial killers across the United States highways. So we were like, well, that's a perfect idea for a story, a perfect setting.
Jeez. So that's an alarming statistic.
Yeah. And thanks for, I won't sleep again. Yeah. Thank you.
Never break down the side of a highway. So, you know,
That's where I would usually break down. That's where I plan on breaking down.
Plan accordingly now. Villages and small towns, no highways.
But what about the small town killers? There's a ton of those too.
Well, those aren't included in the 300. So that's a whole different stat. That's a whole different stat. Yeah, exactly. But basically, these two blue collar brothers, their sister goes missing, and these guys with nothing to lose start going through this group of serial killers known as the Nine, and it's brutal, and there's a lot of horror aspect to it. We wanted to pay homage to Steven Spielberg's Duel and King's Maximum Overdrive and Convoy and all those great 80s trucker movies, while also telling a really cool, like, what could be a true crime story, because the serial killers are actually based on a group of trucker serial killers that would hand victims off between one another that actually exist.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Storm King, that's John Carpenter's imprint, right? What's it like? Have you been working with him? Is he hands-on at all, or is he mostly?
It's a lot more dealing with Sandy, his wife. Okay. But you know, they're amazing. They're one of the best publishers that I've worked with. I absolutely enjoyed the process, and hopefully, we can do a lot more with them. It was great. Every aspect of it was great.
That's so cool.
Cool.
Heath, thank you so much for coming on. Yeah, really appreciate it. Good luck. Can't wait with to check it out. I hope you zoop it up.
Yeah, I'm gonna go zooping right now, actually. So thank you guys for having me. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, really have a great night, Heath.
You too.
All right. Once again, the book is called Copycat. It's on Zoop right now for the next 10 days, as I mentioned, at least.
It's an amazing issue.
So good. I know we got to check out, I think, the whole thing and really, really enjoyed it. Great concept. We said, great execution. Very fun. Let's talk about another comic that also has amazing art and also has an amazing execution. The book, which we've been really enjoying when we've been talking about it on our Stack podcast, is Bloodrick. And we have the creator right here, Andrew Kroenke. Andrew, welcome.
Hey. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh, so excited to have you here. We have, as I said in my intro, loving Bloodrick. So much fun. Dude.
So
this
badass.
This is two issues in now on Image. The third issue is coming out February 7th, I believe, if that's
correct. That sounds right.
And that's the final issue. But this thing, as far as I understand, has been a labor of love for you for a while. Where did this idea start, and why was it so important for you to get this idea out there?
That's a good question. It started a long time ago. It was just a character that I had sketched and wanted to do something with. And the inspiration was just, I was really into Viking metal.
I'll tell you what, I can almost hear it when I read the book.
Yeah.
I hear a vague, distant Viking.
That's awesome to hear, because that's what I was hoping. I mean, even the way I tried to kind of write the narration, stuff like that, I tried to make it sort of rhythmic, like lyrics or something like that. And just listening to enough of that kind of stuff, I just wanted to draw something visually that would fit that, I guess. And of course, a big barbarian dude came out. And I just always liked the way it looked. I mean, the first time I sketched him, he looked basically how he is in the comic, so I haven't really changed anything. Even though it's been a character I've had designed for 10, 11 years. Again, I never really changed anything about him or the concept of what he would be, just kind of a simple character. And, when I sat down to kind of finally do my own book or try to make my own book, the simplest idea was the best one to start with. And Bloodrick, if you've read both issues, the story isn't super heavy. I'm definitely, like I say in the one intro, I'm an artist first and a writer a very distant second, but I just figured it was a good one to start with and something I could kind of wrap my head completely around, without too much trouble. So
first off, this is so badass, man. Congratulations. When we read this, it's such a great thing to have in our stack, and the energy of it kind of jumps off the page. It's a real kind of invigorating, fun comic. Where did your love of kind of like badass revenge kind of stuff, did it start with like Conan movies, or like where did this kind of love of this kind of form come from?
That's a good question. I don't know if I should say this, but I've never actually seen a Conan movie all the way through.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, you get the point. He's a barbarian.
What is best in life, et cetera, et cetera. You get it.
Exactly. Like, I mean, just a big, slightly dumb, angry character that reacts violently to any inconvenience or anything that doesn't go exactly his way.
You get it. Sorry to say that. That's what Pete is for us, too.
But Pete and I have something in common, because I've punched my fair share of walls. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a good thing, but it's something that's familiar to me, I guess. And so, like, I mean, he's an easy character to write or kind of like figure out how he would react to things. Cause I just think, like, what's the most, babyish, but also violent response I could have to something. And that's pretty close to what Bloodrick would do. So I don't know. It's just something that's it comes natural, or it comes easy to me.
One of the things that's so striking about the book to me is, and just to be clear about the story for anybody who's curious, it's a series of tales that people are telling about Bloodrick that mostly concern him wandering through a snowy wasteland trying to find food. That's pretty much the idea there. But because of that setting, and we're looking at a page here on the live show, if you're listening to the audio later, it's him wandering through the snow. But the colors are so interesting. You do have a whitewash on some pages, but then here there's a bit of sort of a pink-ish tinge to things. There's the sun in the background. What led to this color approach as well as the overall just look and setting of the book?
The colors was something I really struggled with because I'm not the strongest color, colorist, I don't think. So it was something that I worked over a lot more than even just doing the line work. Trying to figure out exactly, I don't know, how to make it, get a color scheme that fit the book, but wasn't boring. I'm a big fan of, you know, older style colors, flat colors, you know, the more computerish color looks, I tend to not like it. So keeping it fairly simple, but then just trying to make interesting choices that would fit, you know, the mood of whatever the scene was and stuff like that, was kind of what I was going for. And it took a lot of thinking. I still think that the color is very simple, but it's again, something I don't have any great instincts for. So it takes me a little bit of time
It's a vibe. It's a real vibe. Like what I love about it is, like you said, there's like a simpleness to it. You get what's happening, but also like the feel of it, the kind of look of it, like it really is this kind of warm, but you know, you know what you're getting, and then you're pleasantly surprised when you kind of get into it.
Well, and what I was going to say is, it feels like a fairy tale. It feels like a dusty book you're pulling down, but without all the arch. It's just like, no, Bloodrick hungry and Bloodrick cold, but Bloodrick fight. Yeah. So like. That's great, and that the viscera of it, I think, is awesome. Especially the timing of this, when it's like, at least where I live in New York, it's very cold. Yep. And reading this alongside the temperature dropping, I'm like, Bloodrick fucked.
that's awesome. I was kind of hoping it would come out over like colder winter months.
Yeah,
I'm in New York as well, and I just figured it would fit the book. When Image was kind of figuring out when to schedule it and stuff like that, I was hoping they weren't going to say, like, well, let's put it out in the summer, just because I don't know. I feel like it should come out when it's cold.
Yeah, totally. It's a read it by the fire kind of book. We have a question here from YouTube. This is from Derek. You bring an indie feel to fantasy work. Who are your artistic influences?
Well, that's a good question. A lot of people. Trying to think of all the artists I've tried to imitate over the years, like, you know, like when you're growing up, a lot of you know, you try to copy people's styles, and that's kind of how you learn different things. And I've done that with, you know, half a dozen different artists and stuff like that. I mean, for, he says I bring an indie feel to fantasy work, so I probably shouldn't say this, but one of the big influences when I was drawing Bloodrick and stuff was like 90s Image extreme stuff, like Prophet with Stephen Platt, and I do love some Rob Liefeld comics, so that was part of it.
I love the way you say that.
It's just because it's you know, he's a hot button guy.
Yeah, certainly.
But I mean, I love all that stuff. Big dudes with stupid muscles for no reason. I mean, I read a little bit of everything. I mean, I went to the Kubert School, so I love Joe Kubert stuff.
Nice.
You know, Mignola does a great job doing, you know, one character and kind of, you know, short stories and stuff. So, you know, there's just a bunch of different guys that do that kind of stuff, or do, you know, their own creator-owned writer artist stuff too, that I was thinking about. You know, I was thinking about like Sergio Aragonés with Gru. Kai Usagi Ojimbo, where like the style might not be the exact same in terms of artwork, but like, you know, you're a guy and you created a character and you just keep writing stories with that character. That's kind of what, I picture Bloodrick kind of hopefully being at some point, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's funny that you say Gru, because I think that's so, I hadn't thought that before, but, and then Derek in the comments said refs Barry Windsor Smith. It's like Gru meets Barry Windsor Smith in a fun way, I feel like.
That's, and it's back to the color, like the main color I was looking at when I was doing Bloodrick was, I had the Barry Windsor Smith Weapon X trade sitting next to me. Because that's, I think, like, pinnacle great coloring done by the guy that drew. I mean, it's just like, if you could ape that style, why wouldn't you? You know, it's like, it's perfect in my opinion. So that, I love Barry Windsor Smith stuff. It's incredible.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, this could, maybe this already answers this question then, but one of the things that I've been trying to figure out while I've been reading the book is, I think it's very easy to be like, oh, this is Conan and you didn't get to do a Conan book, so you moved on, but it's different. It doesn't exactly feel like that. What is that difference there in your mind between Conan, who is a large barbarian who kills things and travels the land, and Bloodrick?
I definitely think there is, like I say, I haven't seen a Conan movie, and
I can feel this one if you want.
Sure. Yeah, that was a question for Pete, actually.
Yeah, sorry, well, you see, Conan is a kind of a, more of a, I have a quest, I have a mission, he's driven. Bloodrick's kind of more human. He lets us in a little bit, and he's kind of like, I'm hungry, man. Like, I'm just out here trying to eat, you know, and, you know, like, if somebody's going to get my way, I'm probably going to murder them. But, you know, hopefully that doesn't happen, you know? So like, he lets us in a little bit more than Conan does, you know. Conan keeps us at a distance, you know, and I feel like nice. Bloodrick's a little bit more human version of that. You know, he doesn't mind telling us how he feels about how stuff, really even feels. If it's not like, you know, long or complicated.
I think that's a great answer. That's better than I can, because that's exactly what I would say, is I tried to make it more like ground level. I'll be honest, anytime any fantasy story gets into like kings and soldiers and horses, I kind of fall asleep. I don't care. I don't hear about it.
That's really funny.
So like,
nobody cares.
I mean, I don't want to see another castle and, I don't know, people talking in a dusty
way. What about the loot train, though, where they're bringing the gold from the southern area back toward Castle Rock?
Honestly, I agree with you. This is not to slag off Conan too much, but that's one of the things that, like, there's a lot of good Conan stories, but we get great the same Conan thing all the time, where, again, it's like, Conan, he's just wandering around. Oh, what's this city here? Oh, no, now I gotta kill everybody. Oh, geez. And this, to Pete's point, is just much more, he's just basic needs. He just wants to eat. He wants to get to the next place. He's just living meal to meal. That's all he's got. And that gets me to sort of the other part of it that I think is really interesting about this book, is the framing device of people telling tales of Bloodrick. Mm-hmm. Where did that come from in particular? What led to that?
Well, in the initial story, or like the main story, through the issues, I knew I wanted to have obviously a narrator tell the story, because I wasn't going to have a lot of dialogue. Bloodrick's by himself, you know, he wasn't going to be talking to anybody or saying anything. And I'm a firm proponent that you need to have words on the page to kind of keep people's attention. it's been done. There have been silent comics, and there's been some really well done ones, but it's not something I wanted to try my first go around. I wanted to have also the framing device of the main story being a sword maker, and kind of how, you know, a person is formed over a lifetime. A sword is formed through violence and fire. You know, there was some echoing of the main theme of the story with the narrator. And then it's just a good way to add visual interest and another character to a story about a guy that kind of is in the woods by himself, which could end up being kind of visually boring and not super interesting. So I wanted to have the narration, and we can add, you know, an interesting new character each story that doesn't really have to do anything, but it's just kind of, I don't know, another fun thing to come up with. I get to design another character. And
I love those panels that sort of get us in, the ones that we just showed, like with the sword maker, is really, really nice. Like, that's a great poster, just the one with the metal pouring out of the cup in the beginning. Yeah. So dope.
Given, you have one more issue, which is the last issue. What can we expect from that? And why, given the relatively open-ended nature of what Bloodrick is doing, why wrap it up at three issues?
initially, time. I just started, what's that?
Time. The amount of time at the end of the day.
I wrote as much of a story as I could, and it was only so long, and so... It honestly could have been probably a one shot if I hadn't done the backup stories and kind of fleshed out the main story a little bit more. Because I initially was just going to do it as an ash can just to get something done. You know, I had the kind of a rough idea for a story sitting around for a long time, and I wasn't just doing anything with the character. And I was getting kind of frustrated, and I had a hard time. Self-discipline and getting things done is something that I myself and probably a lot of artists struggle with.
It's a plague on most all creative pursuits, I would argue.
It's rough, and it can be very hard when you've, you know, my main day job is drawing as well. So when you've drawn all day, to sit down and draw again on something else can be hard. And then one February, I just threw my name in for the lottery for a table at Small Press Expo. And I got selected. So I was going to have a table that coming September, and I knew I was going to have stuff to sell. And so that's when I started really busting my butt and trying to get things done. But the story wasn't super fleshed out, to answer your question. So I was just kind of trying to, I was just going to do two ash cans. And then if I did anything with it beyond that, great. But that was the plan. And so that's why the story is only, it's not super long.
This tale.
This one, yeah.
Do you think there is more Bludrick? Is there more Bludrick in you?
Certainly he's going to get hungry
again.
It's
a weird way of saying that.
That's what I'm hungry tomorrow, you know?
I do have, that's actually what I'm working on this week is gathering all the notes I have for Bludrick 2 or whatever the heck I'm going to call it.
Bludrick does brunch, maybe?
What's that?
Bludrick does brunch?
No.
Bludrick at a buffet? They'll, if I can pull it off, there will be more Bludrick. And it'll probably be more well planned out so I don't have to split a single story into three issues and do backups and do all the different stuff and that I did before.
All right. And it's working.
I love it as a package. Is great.
Yeah, the backups are so fun. Don't be too hard on yourself.
I knew the story was very light, and that's why I'm like, I can't just do the main story split across three issues. It's going to feel like nothing. So that was kind of the impetus to do all the three backups in each issue. So hopefully I'm giving people enough bang for their buck.
I think so.
I think so too.
We've enjoyed it. I also think so. I also think so. legitimately, one of the things that I've been enjoying with it is how spare the issues are. The idea that like this issue, he fights a bear and that's it. But it's just like, it's a really good action sequence that's really well drawn. So I'm really enjoying it. So there you go. So looking forward to more, looking forward to the third issue. Andrew, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Pleasure. Yeah.
Can't wait to see Bludrick 2, Bludrick's Revenge. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Thanks for Bludrick.
My pleasure. Thank you for giving it a chance and picking it up. And I really appreciate being on as well. This is awesome.
You bet. Absolutely. Come back when you have the more. We love it.
Deal. Absolutely. Thanks, Andrew. All right, there we go. Once again, the book is called Bludrick. The first two issues are out now from Image Comics. The third issue is coming out February 7th.
Can't wait.
Presumably later this year, Bludrick 2, Bludrick Takes Miami. So that's pretty good.
Bludrick 2.
Bludrick Takes Manhattan.
Takes Manhattan. I think that's what I was actually thinking of.
Muppets Take Miami?
4, Mission Miami? Is that what I'm thinking of?
Is that a police academy? Citizen Bludrick on patrol?
Yeah, Bludrick on patrol. I'd read it. I would read it. Absolutely. We are going to move to our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions. And if you've got questions, all you got to do is drop them in the comments over on YouTube or Twitch, or I could check them on Instagram, I guess. Twitter does it as well. Not Facebook, because again, I screwed that up. And I'm
okay, I'm typing every word we're saying right into the status update.
I've been here.
People are loving it. Oh, it's really hard, but my fingers are moving like crazy underneath here.
While we're waiting for the questions to come in, I am still having a lovely time drinking this copycat, not a Negroni. It's very delicious.
I really enjoyed it.
Dry vermouth, but great stuff.
A friend of mine was just, I almost was saying it was a copycat of this, but it was actually a Boulevardier, a rye Campari and rye vermouth as a...
I definitely know what you guys are talking about, and...
Here, do you know this, Pete? Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Yeah, there we go.
The only beer that's an award.
Come on.
Land shark, yeah. You're drinking your land shark still.
Knock, knock, who's there? Land shark.
I love the land sharks make me feel like you are on mission Miami Beach or whatever Alex is saying.
Yes. Oh, nice. Schoeckler, our film historian has specified the Police Academy 5 was assignment Miami Beach. I think I was mixing it up with, I believe it's Police Academy 4 is mission to Moscow. So I apologize.
Wow.
To all the Hightower and other fans out there.
Imagine being in the writer's room when they were coming. Room, what am I saying? In the writer's Coke lounge when they were coming up with the Police Academy sequels. What a time to be alive.
Yeah. Oh, apparently Mission to Moscow was the 7th. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, you're going to go to Moscow before you go to Miami Beach? You've done this wrong.
I don't know. It was the 80s. Things were weird. We got at least one question here. We'll see if more come in. This is from Nat Towson. Who are some of your favorite comic book barbarians? Bludgerick, of course. It goes without saying.
Bludgerick shouts.
Mm-hmm. Headlopper.
Good call.
Good call. I mean, Conan has really caught on, I feel like, in the last few years. There have been some good Conan stories, I feel like.
Yeah, Jason Aaron did a good run on Conan.
Yeah.
Schoeckler still dropping Police Academy knowledge in.
Citizen on Patrol, that's the one I referenced.
Yeah,
Citizen on Patrol.
Edward Doherty has a little bit of a challenge for us, a classic Kevin-style challenge. Considering the 30-year-plus gap between Miracleman Silver Age issue 6 and 7 and the new Battle Chasers issue, can you remember other extended periods of time between specific issues?
Great question.
There was that break in between Saga issues. I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
That was an intended 1 year break.
Break though. Still counts.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a multi-year gap between stuff. I feel like Grendel had those built in a lot. Yeah. Matt Wagner series.
I love Grendel.
There were some breaks with some Bone series, especially the spinoff series stuff, I think. There's a break between Starman 80 and Starman 81, which was a event-based add-on.
Wasn't there was some Marvel book, maybe it was an Ultimate book, that was running crazy late for the finale. I remember, this is a vague memory with no details, but I feel like it was the last issue of the Ultimates or something like that came out several years too late.
That's hitting something in me. Or was it something Hickman was super delayed?
Maybe it was something Hickman or maybe it was something Hitch. I don't know. This is not helpful to anybody, but I vaguely remember
it's out
something
there.
Like that.
It's fun to be here while you guys are thinking. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thinking and drinking. That's what we're all about here.
Prime Music says, now that we have seen Transformers crossover with G.I. Joe, any wish list crossover comics?
Great. I mean, let's just call it out. Transformers and G.I. Joe is a long shot crossover. So I feel like the spirit of the question is
it's great, though. It's great crossover.
Is it until a this long happened? Shot?
Until this
I
happened,
feel like
were
that
you
was
like.
Was always a thing. Did I.
No, because they were
Mandela
both.
Mandela effect that boys. Or something? I thought they already crossed over all the time.
I don't know about all the time, but they have crossed over a couple times.
It's not I don't think so. I have been the Energon universe feels very surprising.
It feels like the first time.
I don't know. I feel like we've seen so many crossover comics at this point. I don't even know what to ask.
I mean, they already did Batman Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I mean, what more?
Yeah, they
do you
did
need?
That, or they did Stranger Things Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Both of those were good. The Power Rangers Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was a delightful blast. So
well, there's no doubt that the turtles will cross over with fucking anybody. They'll cross over anywhere, and there are certain
what's popular turtles.
The turtles are there. The turtles crossed over with Kelly Ripa's show recently.
Oh, yeah. Live with Kelly and Mark and Raphael. I remember that episode.
Really great crossover. Yeah. Where they were auditioning a lot of hosts. They weren't sure if the Mark thing was going to
So work. You're telling me, you have an internal penis? Let's talk more about that.
Great question, Mr. Consuelos. You're a news person now. What I was going to say is, one to reference here is back in the day, the Amalgam Universe, Marvel and DC crossovers were something that we got a little bit. It was something, there were little bits and pieces every now and again. That is never going to happen again, I feel like. That is a much...
I feel like, yeah, we don't get many as many crossovers maybe as we used to. I don't know.
In that capacity, no.
Yeah. It'll happen at some point.
Really think so? I feel like that's... The way that, like, keeping your peas and carrots separate from an IP perspective, I feel like they're so...
I'm talking way down the road. I don't think it would happen anytime soon with the Disney and WB of it all, but on a long enough timeline, anything will happen. So
yeah, we can see. Be doodling in our future post-apocalyptic caves, whatever we want.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
All right, we got a classic Scheuchler Stempler here. That's what I call them. What are some of your favorite one-off characters and ongoing titles?
One-off characters, I mean, I don't know, Citizen what? Who gets hit by asteroid.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what this means, to be honest. Because once they're in an ongoing title...
Waiter number two is my favorite.
Well, I mean, I do think, you know what it is, it's like... characters that are original characters that sort of hit, and one that they are then repeated, but like Onomatopoeia, the Green Arrow villain, I feel like fits this bill a little bit, like a villain, a short arc villain that pops for whatever reason.
So like Stiltman or your boy Penance,
I don't know. You could say that Penance is your favorite, but that's a crazy statement. No one's favorite is Penance.
I will mention we have a couple of suggestions for crossovers here. We got He-Man, Thundercats, My Little Pony, Care Bears, Voltron, and the Power Rangers, Casper, Ghostbusters. That seems like a disaster waiting.
That could be really
I feel like everyone's not going to make it out of that alive.
I feel like all these comments are people smashing their 80s lunchboxes together. Yeah. There's just truly cartoons.
Voltron, Robotech, Ninja Turtle, Sherlock Holmes. What about, like, if we're going public domain, Sherlock Holmes versus Steamboat Willie? That would be pretty sweet.
Wow, that's
versus? Who's committing Steamboat the murder was, there? Steamboat Willie kills...
It's a classic. Rival. They fight and then team up, you know? How about Incredibles? Incredibles and Fantastic Four?
If we're talking about just kind of doing those like young cartoon mashups, I'd love to see Mask and
Starcom.
There we go.
Is that what you were thinking?
No, but that's great.
Sherlock Holmes Watchmen, which I believe is called League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Hey,
Ninja Turtles, Jiro Dreams of Sushi. Wow, that'd be great. What a treat for Jiro. To meet the Ninja Turtles and have them go to
meet or eat the Ninja Turtles.
I don't know. That would be a hilarious mix them up, right? Like he invites them over to eat them and they're like, I can't wait to meet him. And then oops.
That's a funny, just a typo on the invite.
TMNT, Cold Comfort Farm. These are getting better and better.
Sure.
Well, let's see. Last but not least, Nelson Kelso says, have you guys seen the new trailer?
Nelson Kelso.
Have you guys seen the new trailer for the live-action Avatar Last Airbender on Netflix? Excited for it. Looking forward to good to me so far. I guess looking good to me so far is what he means.
Yeah.
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 Have you seen the new trailer that was released today?
I have not, no. But I am looking forward to it. Mm.
I'm cautiously anticipating it, I guess, what I'd say. I still don't see a reason for it, you know?
What are you talking about? What reason is there?
Avatar the Last Airbender is a perfect TV show. Like there's no reason to remake it.
Yeah, but
I don't
not
know what live action
anymore.
Is going to add to it.
It's more. It's just more. There's no
more with different actors and not the same creators. I don't know.
I hear what Justin's saying, because like when they redid Cowboy Bebop, a lot of people were like, how dare you? But, you know, the live action it's more of the thing that you love. So, you know, it can be enjoyable if it's done well.
Mm-hmm. More is always more now in all of our entertainment. So like there's no way to avoid more.
Wait, I do have one question before we wrap up here. This is actually not the question, but Nat Towson specifies. I was thinking that he, meaning Yiro, would eat the Ninja Turtles, to be clear. Who do you think is the tastiest Ninja Turtle? Like, of the four? Great.
This is a horrible question.
It's a horrible question. Because it's so tough. They all look so delicious all the time. So, yeah, who would you choose? Who's the tastiest Ninja Turtle?
Pete, will you be able to say an answer, or do you want me to?
Yeah, and by the way, you, in case we haven't talked about it on the show, Jason Aaron is taking over the Ninja Turtles starting in July. As we all know, he wrote an amazing series called The Goddamned, and he said that he was directly inspired by The Goddamned on his new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles series. So I expect the turtles are going to be eating people. People are going to be eating them. Should be.
Yeah, there's going to be one turtle will get eaten. And I think it's up to us to choose which one. And Pete, do you have an answer? Because I
refuse to answer this.
Wow. Why? Because you can't eat.
I don't want to think about eating my heroes.
So Raphael is rude.
You
got to
eat your heroes.
Right? Raphael's rude but crude.
Yeah, he's too sour.
Yeah, he's crude. No thanks.
I mean, the best one, the obvious answer is Michelangelo, party dude, consumes the most pizza. So he's going to be marbled with fat.
Oh, he's been,
that's
going to
be tasty
that
turtle. That's tasty turtle.
I agree.
I dine on turtle soup, to quote Shredder, a great connoisseur of food.
All right. And that is it for your audience questions. We are going to move on with our next section, which is trivia.
Wait, Stray Bullet is going with Raph. And come on, you got to back my logic here, Stray Bullet. Stray Bullet says, I'm the only chef here, and I say Raph, large muscular structure and more delicious. I don't know about, is he more muscular? No, he's.
Yeah, he is.
I don't think he is necessary. He's mean. He's mad. And I think that influences.
Variations of Raph. He's
there's a reason the wild beef is massaged.
Do you remember there was that whole thing with mad
You're
cows?
You're gonna argue with our chef?
Mad cows. And Raphael is
a
mad
chef.
Turtle. And you don't
I know, but
eat
there's
that.
A reason a lifestyle of the animal influences its flavor. And like the Wagyu beef, fine beef from Japan, massaged, or Wagyu is not from Japan, but it's in that same style, massaged, given a great life, so it tastes better. And Raphael's the mean one.
Further feedback here. Stray Bullet says, braise the limbs, but the loins would be great.
Now, Pete, does that make you feel weird? Are you sad? Because you got, and here's the thing, you got to remove the masks and the little, you know, ribbons they wear on their arms and stuff. They're ribbons, right? You call those ribbons? The little blue and purple and orange.
I don't know
ribbons.
That you need to remove the mask unless you're eating the face. You know, I think it would be kind of fun to be like, and I leave this up to Stray Bullet, but just to throw it out there, this is just spitballing a little bit, but like you take apart the turtle, break him down to his base parts, except for the face, which you leave the mask on, and then you serve it inside of the shell. Like
that,
all the
I mean,
pieces,
that's a great preparation.
Parts.
I feel like we've become Shredders. I think that's Shredder's whole thing. He's literally a knife. He's a human knife who wants to eat the turtles.
Right. And that was always his goal, right? Was I'm going to eat those turtles, right? Like Gargamel was going to eat the Smurfs and all of that stuff.
All villains want to eat their nemesis. All the Dr. Doom's trying to eat Reed. It's a whole thing.
All the time.
But I will say,
fantastic.
I'm sorry. So sorry, waiter. I have to return this turtle soup. The grappling hook is still in it. And it's like, that's late period Michelangelo. I'd prefer the grappling hook removed.
Yeah. Now, does machines? I'm just wondering.
Ooh, I'd like to eat the one who leads. That feels like a strong choice.
Our first course, the one who leads. Well, anyway, why don't we move on to
the
next
course tasting? Man. Fourth course. Yum. Now, I know Pete is very mad, but Stray Bullet, who Pete loves, we all love. But
yeah, Pete, don't get too mad. That ruins the meat.
Yeah, it ruins the Pete meat. What are you having for dinner? I'm having Pete meat.
Real quick, before we move on to the next section, which of us would be tastiest?
Oh, that's a tough question. I think we'd have to all be mixed up in some sort of meatloaf. Or, as we call it at the restaurant, a Pete loaf. Right. Honestly, why is this making you mad?
There's no world. I don't know how to say this. They don't exist. We cannot eat the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Yeah. This is not a thing that can happen.
We won't eat Splinter because he carries disease.
Yeah. We might eat Casey Jones, though, just to throw that out there.
Yeah, exactly. Now that guy's got some good lean meat.
And now it's time for trivia with Pete LePage. Pete, take it away.
All right. This is the part where we affect you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25
in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics. If you had $25, you go to the comic book shop. That's what you do. When you have money, you just take it right to them and they take it for you.
Yeah. So just say me or hi or howdy or whatever if you want to do trivia. In the meantime, Derek helpfully reminds us, don't forget April. Of course not. By the point that we had eaten all the turtles and Casey Jones, she wouldn't want to live anyway, you know? She'd be like,
that's her whole life out there. She loves those sewer-dwelling friends.
Yellow suit and all.
Video camera.
Yeah, I bet her yellow suit is banana taffy. What do you guys think? I bet that's what it tastes like.
Taffy.
She's just running around in banana
taffy. Saltwater taffy.
Well, we don't have any players. Pete, well, I can...
play.
What?
Everyone's being polite.
Yeah, why don't everybody you guys is being play, polite. And then...
I'll tell you what. Tying back to the main theme of the evening, we can give $25 to whoever gets nominated in the New Hampshire primary tonight. Just like really donating.
Alex, get out of that idea space. Schuykler says he will play.
Oh, there we go.
All right, great.
All right, Kevin.
All right, here we go.
Take it away, Pete. It's
okay,
Kevin.
Okay, great. All right, great. Today's trivia is on fun comic quotes and a small nod to the legend, Joyce Randolph, RIP Trixie Norton. Please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Who said, I know, Dad, but why isn't it ever unfair in my favor? Justin, do you know this one just off the top of your dome?
Not yet. I would look forward to hearing the options.
Well, that's too bad. I guess you're not as hardcore of a fan as I thought. Was it A, Calvin from Calvin and Hobbes, B, Damian Wayne, or C, Ernie Hudson?
I don't know. While we're waiting for the answer from Kevin, Stray Bullet says that the turtles would be a luxury item. Ninja Turtle starts at $95 a pound. Unless... Oh,
Michaeler is correct. It is A. All right, here we go. Yes. Question number two. Who said, did I just get saved by Lady Gaga? Was it A, Deadpool?
Hobbs.
B, Spider-Man? Or C, Phyllis Diller?
Phyllis Diller.
While we're waiting for the answer there, the specification is, unless it goes to auction, and then we're talking in the thousands. I could see that.
That's
they
fair.
Auction soup? Is that a thing? Like soup?
Yes. I've been lost a lot of money on soup auctions. I love a chowder. Or a bit.
I would.
All right. Yeah. B is correct. All right. Great. Question number three. Who said who commits suicide with a bow and arrow? Was it A, Deadpool, B, Spider-Man, or C, Robin Givens?
This makes a little more sense. He's specifying you'd auction parts not soup. That makes more
because it's such a high value protein. Right. They say never meet your heroes, but I think Pete's motto is never eat your heroes. I think we can say.
When they say never meet your heroes, do they mean never turn your heroes into meat? Is that what it actually means?
I think that's what it
don't
meet. He said it was A. That is correct. All right. Awesome. Wow. Yes, it was Deadpool. Sounds like Deadpool and is Deadpool.
But he doesn't know the movie.
It's the 2000 movie, Everything's Jake.
Great.
A movie that is ungoogleable, it sounds like.
Amazing. All right. Well, why don't we talk about what... Well, congratulations, Kevin. You're going to get $25 in turtle soup. Shoot us an email, and we will get that off to you from... Sponsored by Goldbelly. Moving on, though, as we all know, new comic books are coming out all the time. Pete, I know you're taking a big sip of your tea over there, but
yeah,
what are you looking forward to? What are you looking forward to that's out in shops this week?
Green Arrow number 8, as well as Lotus Land number 3.
Look at this guy going to Lotus Land. Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to, if Pete has concluded his statement for the evening, I'm looking forward to The Penguin number 6 by Tom King. This series is just coming at Gotham City storytelling, a very well-trod area, in so many interesting ways. This issue, which is already out, is also great. Definitely worth a pickup. Really fun way to explore some great Penguin backstory. And I'd also shout out The Flash number 5. I know The Flash is Alex's speed force, so to speak. But, man, I've loved Cy Spurrier's take upsetting a lot of the Flash family status quos and really giving us some sort of weird sci-fi addiction maybe metaphor that I've been really, really liking.
Hey, something I was wondering today is – Simon Spurrier and Cy Spurrier, two different people?
No, I don't. No. I was wondering about that. Not that they were different people. They are the same person. But there seems to be this thing when people work for different publishers, sometimes they're giving different names, and it's weird. Priest does that sometimes, too, because Christopher Priest and Priest are the same person. But depending on the publisher, he gets credited in different ways. So, I don't know. There you go.
Yeah, it may just be a consistency thing.
Yeah, or a contract thing, potentially. A bunch of stuff that I was very curious to check out that is coming out this week. I will give a shout out to... Oh my gosh, I just lost what I was going to say. I was curious to check out Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 147, just because we are ending that series with 150 and then getting into the Jason Aaron run. So curious to see what happens with that. Also for IDW, the Star Trek Defiant Annual 2024. Very curious to check out that one too. Ghost Machine number 1 from Image. This is a big thing for a bunch of big name creators. I guess we'll have to see if it really pans out into a good issue or not. And last and certainly not least, my most hyped issue of the week. This is going to be a huge shocker to everybody, but Power Pack Into the Storm number 1 from Marvel.
Boy.
Bringing back the original team of Louise Simonson and Jude Brigman that created Power Pack to the title for a new story set in the continuity of the original Power Pack. That's my jam, yo.
We're going to get an alien horse. I can almost guarantee it. Aren't we, Alex?
I only like my Power Pack when it's written by Alex Zalbin.
Oh, that is very sweet. But
Zalbin Pack. Hashtag Zalbin Pack.
Hashtag Zalbin Pack. Perfect note to end on. And that is it for this week's show. Yes. What?
There is a message I put into private chat.
Oh,
but I don't know.
That's okay. Don't worry about it. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Andrew Kroenke for coming on to talk about Bloodrick. Check out issue 1 and 2, as well as 3 coming out February 7th. Copycat from Heath Amodio and Colin Bunn and other people on Zoop right now. Next week on the show, we're going to have a packed one. Olivia Quartero Briggs is going to be here to talk about Odie Press's Jill and the Killers. Dave Baker is coming on to talk Mary Tyler Moorhawk. And Micah Sherman will be here to talk about Orange Flavor. Yeah. So very fun show. Bunch of other podcasts to check out. Comic Book Club News coming at you every day of the week with comic book news. Also, Marvel Vision, our podcast, is back with some Marvel news. Sons of a Gun back with some DC news. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support this show and all the shows we do. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice. At Comic Book Live on Twitter/X. Comic Book Club Live on Instagram and TikTok. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, good night.
Thanks, everybody. Take care.